It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here is producer Maureen McCollum with a story about Wisconsin's massive creatures.
Have you ever wondered what the biggest animal in Wisconsin is? If so, you're a lot like Alston Van Overmeer of Mineral Point. When he was in fourth grade, he asked WPR's Wisconsin Project to find the answer for him. So WPR's Colleen Leahy went to track down the state's biggest animals.
The first time you see a blue whale, it's a life-changing experience.
Oh my God!
Weighing up to 400,000 pounds, the blue whale is the largest animal that's ever existed in the history of planet Earth.
Oh my God!
Oh my God, yeah!
Oh my God. I haven't seen a blue whale myself. Those people you just heard, having the times of their lives, we're in California and Mexico. This is Wisconsin. So I took a trip to see the biggest animal America's dairyland has to offer, a bison. Like, how many do you have?
Right now, between 60 and 70. Greg Cumrow, Farmers Battle Creek Beef and Bison LLC. We raise bison and sell the meat.
At 6 feet tall and weighing a ton or more, I still got the philosophical fix I was looking for from Cumrow's herd of bison. The animals were majestic. They humbled me. They helped me remember that we humans are minuscule. We are but a blip in Earth's 4.5 billion year history.
Oh my god, it's coming closer. Is it, like, safe to be close, get close to them?
No.
Now that I'd proved myself to be a bona fide farm girl, Karmer decided I was ready to talk shop and see the behind the scenes of his operation for myself.
Well, I have New York strips, ribeyes and tenderloins, chuck roast, sirloin tip roast, rump roast, brown roast, bratwurst, summer sausage, stew meat. You know, there's just about any cut you can find in beef you can find in bison.
Whoa. Even though they often end up in the freezer, it's easy for bison to be the heavyweight champion in Wisconsin because they also hold the title of largest land animal in all of North America. But wait, there's actually another big Wisconsin animal I haven't told you about yet, and that is moose. Unlike bison, which are all captive in Wisconsin, moose are wild, but they're very rare. The Department of Natural Resources says there are probably fewer than 20 moose in the entire state, most of them up north, which is too bad. But you know what's even worse than not having many moose? Not having any whales. There aren't any whales in the Great Lakes today. Sure, I can accept that. But I had trouble believing that there were never whales in our past, and that there won't ever be whales in our future. So I asked a whale expert, straight up, are whales just never going to happen for us?
The scenario for the Midwest isn't totally outlandish, I think. There could have been whales in Wisconsin.
That's Nick Pyonson, curator of fossil marine mammals at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History and author of the book Spying on Whales.
So if you want to get whales into the Midwest, one way is to just wait until sea level gets high enough.
Sea level's high enough that whale barriers like waterfalls and locks and dams would be eliminated, allowing Canadian whales in the St. Lawrence River to swim down to Lake Erie. That's probably not going to happen, though, at least not in my geologic lifetime. But that's okay. With no whales in sight, I eventually came around the idea that Wisconsin's biggest animal, the bison, is a pretty decent backup.
Look at the little faces!
I think they're majestic.
I was just about to say that.
WPR's Colleen Leahy brought us that story on Wisconsin's biggest animals. And this story came from an audience question as part of WPR's Wisconsin Project. Send us your questions and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now we explore pharmaceutical tech transfer and the process of bringing new drugs to market with the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery, which helps further the drug development research of UW-Milwaukee faculty. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, approved 50 novel drugs last year. Join in on the research, the testing, and the manufacturing of innovative drugs. 800-642-1234. Alexander Arnold is director of the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery, vice president of the Milwaukee drug development startup Pantherix. Alexander, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Having me, Kate.
Good morning. We also have Doug Stafford, CEO of Pantherix, formerly led the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery. Doug, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning. So, Doug, starting with you and developing this new anti-inflammatory drug aiming to control asthma without inhalers, how was this compound discovered?
Well, through a long process of research. For every drug, there needs to be a target within the body that the drug interacts with. And the early stages occurred through a collaboration with Columbia University to identify a new target in the lung. And then the group in Milwaukee really took on the chemistry to design a drug through Alexander's work. And so the innovation, the spark of innovation occurred within the university laboratory setting.
So where is it in the development process?
We're about to begin human clinical trials. And so we're in the final stages of what's called preclinical research. And after that, we would proceed to clinical studies in human beings under FDA guidance.
And so during a new drug's early preclinical development, your goal obviously to determine if the product is reasonably safe for initial use in humans. And I'm always curious, how do you do that exactly?
Through a number of studies, and they're typically begin with studies in cell culture, where then it moves on to various animal models, normally in rodents. Typically, diseases are capitulated in animal models, and so you can learn a lot about how the drug might work in human beings by studying it in a mouse.
Alexander, so Doug had mentioned Columbia University there in the mix of bringing this to UW-Milwaukee's Institute for Drug Discovery. It can take a decade or more for drugs to come to market. How do you know when it'll be worth the cost, the time, the bench science to create a new drug?
Yeah, I think the kind of like litmus test in order to see if a compound is really market ready is in the development, where a lot of groups, you mentioned Columbia University, are working together. And, you know, in order to have money to support this work, we are submitting grants, which get reviewed by national, international researchers. And they're giving us a really good feedback about what the invention looks like and if the invention is actually ready for the next step. So we really rely on our peers in order to tell us that, you know, we are ready for the clinical trials. And if we have conducted our preclinical trials sufficiently in order to make sure that a new compound is safe enough in order to be administered to a human.
So where do you look to get the funding to carry out the bench science and to move the drug development along to next phases? Is it mostly through grants, or are there private dollars too?
Yeah, so it's mostly grants in the beginning. The NIH is the institutes of the NIH are very, very important for drug discovery. They are internal grants from the university in order to support their researchers. But you know what you mentioned, yeah, the private market is very important. So we are looking for investors in order to, you know, come up with money and I'm talking here about significant money in order to support these clinical trials.
And when you say significant, what is, you know, for the average drug, was necessary in order to support clinical trials?
It depends on what kind of phase you are. You know, there are three phases, clinical phases, and they are all affiliated or all related to a particular dollar amount where it's increasing over time. And it also depends on the indication. There are some indication where the clinical trials are broader. Here we're talking tens of millions of dollars. And other indications are smaller, where you have a smaller population of patients. And so, you know, these are a little bit less money intensive.
Yes. You know, Doug, so Pantherix recently received this grant from the NIH for more than $250,000 and aiming to help the company, the startup, develop this oral version of your anti-inflammatory drug. What does grant money like this go toward as you look at moving this research along?
It really helps with validation of the concept. And so the drug started off with very early research. And as you move ahead, there needs to be increasing validation that this, in fact, can be a human pharmaceutical to justify the really significant costs of moving that towards FDA approval. So this money helps validate. And as Alexander said, you know, part of the grant process is not just the money, but it's the affirmation through experts in the field that this is really a compelling areas of research. And so we see that as important steps in the process, as well as allowing us to fund important steps of the process. This recent grant will pay for the oral formulation, and that is taking the compound, which is a chemical, and putting it into a pill form that is necessary to advance the product into human testing.
And, you know, this is definitely a step away from inhalers, which is a really common way of treating asthma. Is the oral approach, do you think, is that unique or a niche that is worth going toward?
Yeah, there are other oral drugs that are used for asthma. However, we feel that our drug could compete with the typical inhalers that are used as the first line control of asthma. As you probably know, most people don't use asthma inhalers correctly. The drug doesn't go into the lung as it should. Many people don't use the inhalers. And we think that an oral drug that could be, say, taken once a day instead of the inhaler would be a much better therapy. We talk about drug compliance, and that is the taking of the drug as prescribed. We think an oral drug would have much better compliance than the inhalers. And also, because of the novelty of the mechanism of the drug action, we think there would be far fewer adverse effects compared to the steroids, for example, that are commonly in the inhalers.
We're talking about drug development with Doug Stafford there and Alexander Arnold. Doug leads a Milwaukee-based drug development startup working on this novel anti-inflammatory drug. Alexander oversees the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery, working with UW-Milwaukee institutions and researchers. Join in on pharmaceutical R&D here in Wisconsin, where you find opportunities, where you find roadblocks, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We look at pharmaceutical drug development happening in Milwaukee. According to the journal Nature, the FDA approves about 51 drugs a year. That's its five-year average. A decade ago, the average was 24 novel therapeutics approved a year. Join in on the tech transfer, the R&D of innovative drugs, 800-642-1234. Alexander Arnold and Doug Stafford, they run a Milwaukee drug development startup, and Alexander also leads the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery. They stay with us. You know, I want to talk a little bit, Alexander, about tech transfer and how your institute approaches tech transfer or moving, like, the manufacturing and the analytics, the documentation, the patents, the expertise from one phase to the next or from one lab to another as more companies or labs get involved. What is that like?
Yeah, so the process starts, as you said, Kate, in the laboratory. And you know, in the laboratory, if you're working there, an invention comes very easily and suddenly. And if this is happening in the laboratory, you would contact the UWM Research Foundation, who would support you in order to convert that invention into a patent. And this is probably like the first step in the many steps of drug discovery. Now, in the laboratory itself, we're also looking for advice in respect to how do we really advance a compound. And there, the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery is very important, which is a collaborate institute with many expertise. And so we can really guide investigators in order to make the next steps. Now, after we have a patent, the next step would be in order to do the preclinical trials. And this is something which the Institute is supporting. So we developed an infrastructure at UW-Milwaukee where investigators can now take advantage of this network and of this infrastructure to do the next steps. And myself as a director, I'm really into the midst of it in order to have personal conversation, to suggest what to do next, and, you know, looking for funding opportunities in order to make those happen.
Communication is such underlying so many of these processes. Doug, do you feel that type of support as you try to launch this particular drug? I mean, what are your thoughts on tech transfer and that road to commercialization?
Yeah, I mean, even though the technology now has been licensed into a company, the company still relies heavily on the university expertise. A startup company cannot go out and hire 100 people right off the bat to do this. And so there's continual connection with the university as far as helping and develop methods for scale-up manufacturing, for analytical types of work, for validation in preclinical studies and the like. And so that's a continual linkage. And so that, and the inventors of the technology are also part of the company. And so while there's been essentially a handoff to the company for later stage development, the linkages with the expertise at the university will always be essential.
Is there enough pharma industry around you here in Wisconsin in order to do this work? Or like in some industries, it helps to be elsewhere. How do you feel about that?
Well, Wisconsin, in fact, does have some really outstanding capabilities in pharma. For example, compound manufacturing or drug manufacturing is really a strength in Wisconsin. There's also great capabilities for preclinical toxicology work, for bioanalytical work to support preclinical and clinical studies. And so there's actually a lot right here. It may be a little bit behind the scenes, but we take great advantage of those companies and also the expertise that's here in Wisconsin. And while the industry is not large by any stretch compared to, say, coastal areas, there is great capabilities right here.
We're talking about drug development and that process with Doug Stafford and Alexander Arnold. Doug is the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery's former director, runs Pantherix, a Milwaukee-based drug development startup. Alexander Arnold runs the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery. You can join in 800-642-1234. Alexander, more than 90% of clinical drug development fails to produce a drug that goes to market. So what happens if, like, what you're working on, something that you've put your heart and soul and everything into, what if it fails human trials? What is that like?
Yeah, what is it like, Kate? That's a really good question. Yeah, there is some disappointment there, but we know the process and we know about the high failure rate. So what we do in order to counteract this is not to put all eggs in one basket, but we are looking, for instance, for the compound we are developing, if there might be some other indications where we see some positive results. So concentrating on asthma is one strategy, but also concentrating on patients where this compound might be efficacious could work in favor if a clinical trial with asthma would fail. Now, another strategy is to maybe look at different kind of compounds with different kind of profiling. And this also allows you to have a backup compound, which you could then advance in case that your primary lead compound would fail in clinical trials. So having backup plans, having like a plan in place if something where you want to is the strategy which is currently used in drug discovery.
Okay. Doug, research published in the American Chemical Society says academic inventors or drug company founders contributed to more than a quarter of all medicines approved by the FDA from 2001 through 2019. What impact have you seen from the rise of academic contributions to new drug development?
Yeah, that transition had occurred over the last 20 or so years, where a majority of drug discovery happened in large pharmaceutical companies. But when you think about it, how is innovation best carried out? And you know, what's playing out from the statistics you just read is that innovation occurs in small, nimble organizations that are accustomed to risk but can take chances. And if an idea comes up, you can go into the laboratory and test it, as is happening in the Institute of Milwaukee. And so we're seeing that really playing out, is that small, nimble groups in academia or in small biotech companies are coming up with the ideas and essentially take them to the point of validation. And then at that point, it's quite typical to hand off the technology to the large pharmaceutical companies for the very large, expensive, complex clinical trials. So I think the innovation aspect of this is really quite real.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Alexander Arnold leads the Milwaukee Institute for Drug Discovery. Doug Stafford is its former leader, and they're executives at the Milwaukee drug development startup Pantherix, working on that asthma anti-inflammatory drug. Just ahead, we get a preview of major Broadway productions around Wisconsin and check in with local theater companies. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.